And I just, we had asked several people, and not knowing very many people, so we had to ask people if they knew of anybody. And so we finally just heard from, Linda Blessin has a friend who is a travel agent, and I don't remember what her name was, and she was in the earthquake, and her brother actually died in the earthquake, so I think Les is going to do that one.
Yeah, it was
very sad. But I've never... Okay.
Shut it off or whatever.
Okay.
He's a music teacher. And we lost him in Calson Bay. If you drive down that West Street Hill, you know where the Calson Bay is.
Oh, okay.
Then if you look right along the water's edge, you can almost see where it's a little road. So you used to come down that hill and the road went right along that water. And Rose and Gene, they happened to be my neighbors. He happened to be a school teacher for Kodiak School. Were stuck down there because initially the tunnel was.
Did they live up? Were they on the on the road or?
It was Good Friday and we had no school. And what happened was it shook so bad and then the water went really goofy. It just started coming up real slowly and it carried driftwood up to the road. So then all these people were kind of trapped there in that area trying to lift the wood off, and then a very large wave came in by then. Was about half hour after the shake, the people were there trying to get into town, you know, and their cars were trapped. And Kelsey Bay as it becomes, you know, narrower and shallower the way you get out of water. They never did find his body, but did find her clinging to a log
which
way back. And then the truck was found there again. Very sad time for us.
See, now I mean, I've lived in Alaska all my life. I've never heard of any. All the people I knew, you know, were in Anchorage, and yeah, they got rocked and everything. But
that, there were some bad stories of the cliff going down and the houses getting kind of swallowed. Which is neurologist.
I don't know.
Lost a child. It was bad. Really bad.
But I guess that the tidal wave, it really was a mess. Yeah, I was. My mom was 8.5 months pregnant with me, so I just missed it.
You got the shaking up a little bit.
That's why I'm a little off. Okay. That's where that inability to spell well came from, I think.
Okay.
Okay. So, anything you want to talk about? And he says that you know, you're finding that afterwards you realize you didn't want that on tape or something. We can edit it, take it out. He said you can fix grammar and not have so many ums and pauses and all that stuff, but.
So
I just stuck it on because I don't. I won't use this lead part. I'll just.
So you wanted to maybe when you talk to me, you wanted to find out more about nursing in Alaska. When I came in 1957, finished at the University of Washington, and happened to be in a classroom where the instructor wasn't exactly real interesting, you know. It was kind
what school were you at?
At the University of Washington, School of Nursing. And I was taking some courses toward a public health degree, and it was one class was rather dull. I was talking to a lady that was sitting next to me, and she told me about, I think she was working on a master's degree and had been in Alaska. So that really piqued my interest. And I asked lots of questions and I started writing, and of course I thought I wanted to do some adventures, and some of my friends were going to come up, they were teachers and they were going to teach. But when it came time to really go, nobody showed up, and I thought, well, I have this job I had written away, and found out all about working in Alaska in Eskimo villages, and so
I like through the Department of
Health Service, and was actually a part of health research. And I was a field nurse for them. So I was not working for the state health department, but it was public health. The reason they had a team of nurses working in the villages is because tuberculosis was so rampant. And they did not have hospital space for all the people that needed to, you know, that they were trying to follow on that. They were trying to case find early, treat early, and hopefully, you know, minimize
that
the amount of people that would really turn positive and be infectious to others and then have to be hospitalized. So I was sent to Bethel, Alaska. And coming from Seattle, where I was raised, and going to the University of Washington, I flew in on the old, they didn't have jets to Alaska in those years, in the old Constellation, and I came to Alaska and thought Anchorage looked pretty small to me in 1957. And then spent a little time there at the Native Service Hospital and at Arctic Health, learning more about the types of things that were had us do in our villages. And then I got on a plane that was even smaller and went to Bethel, Alaska, which had an airport on one side of the river. Then you got off the airplane, you got in this boat, this skiff, and I think I was kind of dressed up that day. And you came across the river and got into this old truck, and then they threw me on to the hospital. But, and then from there, of course, then I would even go to smaller villages.
Were you scared? Or?
Well, I thought at the time, what in the world did I do? I knew I wanted adventure, but I thought, oh my goodness.
This is pushing it.
Yeah. But I thought, oh well, I've made this commitment, now I can do it. And then, you know, going to the villages and being dropped off, and you would be the only, you know, Caucasian person in this Eskimo village in those years, and many of the people didn't know the language. I really thought, my goodness, what did I do? I did stay with the school teachers, and many of my villages had school teachers. And I would either stay with the school teacher or maybe the Eskimo family that ran the store.
Wow. They'd have an extra bed or corner or something?
I took my sleeping bag, and then one village, I just rolled it out on this little store on the countertop and slept there. I, you know, could sleep wherever.
Wow.
And of course, it wouldn't be the things that we were used to, like running water. Coming from the other way then, coming back to Bethel, looked pretty big. And when we went to Anchorage, it looked really big. And at the time I went back to Seattle, man, that really looked big. But as I said, I did come up for TB nursing. It was very rampant in those years. People were dying. We had the medication isoniazid that was being used as a treatment for people that had the tuberculosis bacillus or the germ in their body. And so Arctic Health had this study going. It had been done in, I think, Puerto Rico and other places, and they were really trying to control tuberculosis. So what we did was go in to villages and TB test everybody, find out who actually had an infection. And they would also be followed up by x-ray teams that would come out several times a year to villages to try to x-ray people. And it was our job to see that people were taking the medication and, you know, following them. And if they, if the x-ray showed that they did have a more serious case, follow the sputums. In other words, you'd have to give them a little can and kind of teach them how to cough up the sputum. And that sputum would then be checked for TB germs. Now, if you had that person in the sputum, you knew that that person was being infectious. And 15 others maybe in your small house. Or, you know, in the banyas or where they would all congregate in tight areas. So it was important that we try to separate those people from the villages. And so it would be very hard. Sometimes you'd have to go and you'd have to tell your mother that you'd have to go to the TB thing. Or perhaps the father, you know, would have to leave his village and go on the airplane to Bethel, and from Bethel go on then to a tuberculosis hospital. And at that time they were sent them to Furlands, which is outside of Seattle, and I think Mount Edgecombe had the TB hospital, and there was some space in Anchorage, and I believe in the Indian hospital outside of Portland, I believe, but they also would send some of the people, and you can see what a big adjustment would be for those people to have to go, or you'd have to take their child, or the young people, and I think in my experiences way back then, the young people had the hardest time. They would go out and be in the hospital for, you know, 6 months, a year, whatever, until they were deemed, you know, treated. And then they would come back to their villages, and everything would seem so very foreign to them. And it would be a very hard adjustment. Life out in the cold tundra, and with TV and radios and cars and all those things, and then all of a sudden you come back. And I think maybe others wouldn't quite understand where the experiences that they had. And so I think it was a very difficult thing. That always felt very bad if you had to go and tell some father that he had to go to a hospital, and then, you know, you'd worry. But in the villages, we're very supportive of each other, so others would then help. you know, support their family. But still, it would be very hard,
yeah,
you know, for a mother to have to leave her children, or children to have to leave their parents. Mm-hmm. So it was a very hard time. Yes, we staffed out a lot of the TV, but we, in the meantime, there were other problems that, of course, would have been created. Mm-hmm. As I said, I think a lot of the young people just had a very difficult time ever adjusting back after having been out in the big city.
So was the, were you at risk of getting it? Was there anything you could do to prevent?
When you're a nurse, you're always at risk, or in any kind of medical worker, you're at risk of getting, but you try to use, you know, good technique. I tried to make sure people didn't cough in my face. I washed my hands a lot, and I would have TB tests every 6 weeks just to make sure, just to see. And interestingly enough, I've never converted. You know, a lot of people will have contact with the TB germ and become positive, uh-huh, with your skin test. It does not mean you have an active case, and that's something that people need to understand. You might be positive, and when I do testing here in school now, I want children to always understand, even if it is positive, it doesn't mean you have an active case. It just means that they've come in contact with the TB germ, and their body is setting up some antibodies to fight that germ. But generally for children, what they do now is you put them on a prophylaxis of Isoniazid or a TB drug, just to make sure, you know, and X-ray. And that's kind of the name of the game, is to really find it early, mm-hmm, get it treated, and then people are fine. It's a little frightening now because we are getting some strains that are very resistant to the drugs that we have. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that is because of the compliance. People haven't taken their drugs as regularly as they should. And unfortunately, we now have some strains that are pretty tough to kill. So we thought we had it pretty well stamped out there, you know, in the 60s, and, you know, well controlled, and now it's raising its ugly head with so many people that have immune problems,
yeah,
right, and the AIDS,
mm-hmm,
and people are really prone to get TB too. But in those years, I lived in Bethel outside of the hospital. I worked very closely with the doctors in the hospital there. I would go out and test all the people and make sure they were taking their TB medication. At the time I was there, we were doing an eyes and study. What they were doing is putting the whole village on prophylaxis of that drug. So whole,
wow,
families would have, you know, the drug that they would take. And the purpose of that was to keep them from breaking down, you know, with tuberculosis. And that program proved to be quite, you know, successful, and they are using, you know, that research and all that, what they've done is, you know, being used now. And so when children have now convert to a positive, they get put on medication again. So it was kind of an important time in tuberculosis. We were glad that we could control it and treat people before they got to a point that they had to be hospitalized. And those that were active cases, we tried to get out of the villages right away and into treatment so that we could stop the spread. But almost everybody in the villages were tested positive, and those kind of things that were
so much exposure.
So much exposure.
So
I traveled, I lived out in a little quonset hut outside of the Bethel Hospital. They had a little Quonset house, and I thought it was a neat little place. Bethel is a very flat tundra if you've ever visited there. It's very, very flat, lots of winding rivers. It's right there on the Kuskokwim River, and my area was the lower Yukon River. So I flew by the old Norseman plane, the old Norseman, which of course now is a museum. Yes, it was very slow moving. And would fly up to the Yukon River. And my area was mostly the Yukon River. And I had the villages such as Luckanuck and Queeduck and Longmont. I need an ice pack.
What happened? Oh, this girl, she hurt her knee and she can't walk
on it. Okay, why don't you have her have this and put it on for a while, and she needs to come down and see me. Somebody can help her come on down.
Okay.
You're in after school sports now?
Yeah.
Okay, so I had the villages on the lower Yukon, and I would try to visit my villages every 3 months. So I would follow families, you know, take my pills. While I was there, I would also do things. I worked closely with the health department and the public health nurses from the health department, so I would immunize kids too. And we'd always have our little clinics, that you always had your open clinics so people could come and see with all their aches and pains, you know, mm-hmm. other than just the TB nursing. So there were always things to be dealt with. So you were pretty busy when you were in the villages.
Delivering babies or anything like that?
Well, actually, I never had to do that. Interestingly enough, there would be a father that in one village, they didn't want to wake me up at night, but they'd have me come in the morning and check on the baby and the baby and put the live drops in like that. It was very, they just had babies. It was just a very natural thing, and that was the way it was. As I said, I tried to travel to each village about every 3 months, and follow people as closely as I could, with especially tuberculosis. Later on, there was an eye disease called lectanular keratoconjunctivitis. Conjunctivitis, and don't ask me how to spell that. PKC, they called it, and they were, the researchers were thinking that it had something to do with tuberculosis. In other words, children, you would get eye infections, and when the infections would heal, you would have like a scarring on the cornea, which of course would interfere with your vision. Mm-hmm. It would be like looking through a foggy window. You know, your cornea kind of covers your eye and your pupil there, and you'd get these spots. So we would kind of examine everybody's eyes. We were trying to train or teach the people to go to the health aid. Each village had a little health aid. Perhaps some Eskimo woman that, you know, was very good at that, maybe it was the midwife or whatever, and they had a certain amount of medications that the hospital would give to these people. And so if we could teach mothers, if a kid's eye was infected or red or anything, would go right and get it treated, the treatment would keep it from getting cloudy, so you would not see these scars. You would see older people, a lot of them have these white scars on their cornea. Huh. And so we were trying to prevent that problem too. So there were a variety of things. And while you're there, you're trying to do a little teaching, you know, on
preventative
nutrition and preventative and covering your cough and things of that nature. I worked, these people were Yupik Eskimos that I worked primarily with.
Did you do anything with the school, going to the schools kind of things? Or?
Well, yes, I would do little things. Of course, I do a lot of the TB testing and shots.
Cool.
So I'd use the school a clinic. Now, there were not as nice as schools now since statehood. Of course, they've gotten much, much better. And some of the schools were pretty primitive, some of the old BIA schools. Well, I shouldn't say primitive, but they were not nearly
not like
as
today.
Nice as they are now. And I would use that facility, whatever facility I could, as a clinic. I set up a clinic wherever I could. Sometimes I would have to, you know, in the summertime, go by boat out to the fish camps. They would all go on the sloughs and rivers around. And to follow, I would hire a villager to take me. Then I'd pack my stuff up, my gear, and go up and down. We'd find all the different families, because in the summer they would get their fish so they could get enough for their own selves, subsistence to eat, and then also sell it to the cannery. There'd be several canneries in that area, or saltery. There was some canneries, but they also had, like Sheldon's Point had a saltery, which was kind of dug into the tundra, or they'd store in huge barrels. They'd take this wonderful king salmon, because Sheldon's Point is at the mouth of the Yukon River, and the king salmon would be so huge and fat, you know, as they'd come in there. And then the people would catch those fish, and they would salt them and sell them to the markets in New York. And also, what the people would do is sell the fish to the canneries, and then in exchange, and they would have credit there in the winter to buy some of their staples. And they lived off of, you know, the land, their subsistence, but they also could buy dried milk and flour and sugar and things of that nature. You know, so kind of work for the cannery and also fish for themselves.
Wow.
So, and I would travel by dog sled in the winter to visit, because some of the families lived away from town. Most of the town, the villages would be clustered around, but there'd be, you know, families that would be living a little ways out. Or if I connected up with some villages that would, you know, I would take a dog sled from one village to the other. And that was before the Iditarod, but it was, you know, I mean, dogs, those were quite a common thing. That was their way of getting around. They were just kind of starting with the snow machines in those years, but they're not, they weren't as sophisticated as they are now, and oftentimes would break down or run out of gas, whereas the dog sleds wouldn't. They could go, and if it was a storm, they could get you home. No matter if it was snowing, your lead dog would know how to get you home. So it was really probably a little safer, because we do read about snow machines getting lost now. Well, if it had been, you know, 34 years ago, those dogs would have got them right through that blizzard and right home.
Or you could have cuddled up with one and kept you warm.
Right.
Wow.
So, I don't know what else you...
Well, let's see. I had all sorts of questions as we were talking. Did you have like a boss or something, or how did?
Oh, well, our chief nurse was in Anchorage. Yeah, can we click it? I guess she was.
Well, this is Mary James interviewing Gretchen Saffy, April 3rd, 1995.